Welcome to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast, where we help you in the LGBTQ plus community find a safe and affordable retirement place. Join Mark Goldstein as he interviews others who live in gay-friendly places around the globe. Learn about the climate, cost of living, healthcare, crime and safety, and more. Now, here's your host, Mark Goldstein.
Today, we're going to be exploring Sitges, Spain. Our guest is Leo Bonney. I'll tell you a little bit about Leo. So Leo and his husband wanted a change of lifestyles. They were living in the San Francisco Bay Area and were both tired of the high cost of living, the lack of vacation time, and not being able to shake the feeling that they could not afford to retire there. He is Italian by birth, so at first they wanted to move to Italy, but they decided not to in order for them to get a new experience. They chose Spain because of its weather and infrastructure. They did an exploratory trip to Barcelona and liked it, but didn't fall in love with it. They did fall in love with Sitges. They moved to Barcelona first, though for a variety of reasons, but mostly because this was pre-pandemic and his job required him to be in the office, which was located in Barcelona. When quarantine came, they took the opportunity to move to Sitges. There were several deciding factors, being on the beach in a smaller town with a vibrant gay and food scene. Sitges offered more tranquil life than they were looking for. So yeah, it sounds really good to me, Leo.
It was so fantastic. The way you say it makes it sound even more romantic.
Thank you. And Leo is an Italian citizen, so they have the right to live and work in Spain. And for Leo, immigration process was easy. It took less than 10 minutes. But for Bill, his husband, it took over 6 months. Sitges is approximately 30% expats, and many people here speak English, but he finds it nice to learn the language to fit in better. And it also makes traveling, reading the news, going to the doctor, and participating in local events easier. He feels that if you're going to move to another country, you should try to learn the language. Yeah, and I agree with that. That's in any country, in any case, any city. So we'll tell you a little bit about Sitges. Sitges is a coastal town in Spain's Catalonia region, southwest of Barcelona, backed by the mountainous Parc Natural del Garraf, if I pronounced that right.
You did.
Thank you. It's known for its Mediterranean beaches and seafront promenade, lined with grand mansions. The compact old town and surrounding streets are filled with shops, restaurants, and many gay bars and nightclubs. The Maricel Museum and Cau Ferrat Museum showcase Catalan and other Spanish art. And without further ado, I introduce you to welcome Leo to the podcast. Thank you so much for joining us. And
well,
yeah.
Oh, sorry. Ahead. I was going to say thank you so much for having me here. I'm really excited.
Oh, our pleasure. And tell the audience your story. How did you decide on Sitges? I know it was Barcelona at first, but you were living in San Francisco. Was it the Italian citizenship that kind of brought you to Europe?
Yeah. So in general, I really missed living in Europe. And also, I have never lived in Europe as an adult. The last time I lived here, I was 14, I think 13, actually. And so I had all these memories of living in Europe as a child. And so I was very aware of the fact that as an adult, things are different. And at the same time, I really felt compelled to go back to my roots and be closer to family, the ease of travel, infrastructure, just European lifestyle appealed to me, even though it's not that living in Europe is easy or easier than it is in the United States. It's just, it's different. And I was looking for something different. And so there were a number of factors that really helped us narrow where we wanted to live. As you mentioned earlier, I really wanted to move back to Italy. In a way, it felt like going home. And my husband was like, yeah, but you know, that would be great. But if we move to Italy, it's not going to be really a new adventure for you. And he was right. And so we looked at a number of different places. We explored Portugal as a possibility, Spain. I had been to Spain. We'd both been to Spain separately in different parts of our lives. And I really loved the Spanish culture in general. The Spanish people are very warm and very friendly. I like the fact that it's an influx of different cultures that really impact modern day Spain. And so it boiled down to two or three different places. So we were thinking about maybe Madrid, maybe Barcelona, maybe Valencia. And we immediately thought maybe not Madrid because we wanted to be closer to the sea. And so it was really between Valencia and Barcelona. And it boiled down to where I got a job. I applied for a bunch of different jobs. In hindsight, my employer took a big risk on me because they hired me and I was still living in California. And so they had to have, yeah, they really had to have some trust that I was going to move to Barcelona. And so that's what brought us here. And we made some adjustments. So we had this thought in our heads that we would find like the most magnificent place to live and spend our days skipping down the street with sunshine and
utopia.
Utopia, that's right. And in reality, we've moved three times since we have been in Spain. And where we are now, I think, is like we have this feeling like, okay, this is it. This is the place that we're going to be in for a while. And so in a nutshell, that's what brought us to Spain.
So, wow, three times. Was it twice in Barcelona and once in Sitges?
It was actually twice in Sitges. So, okay. When we moved to Barcelona, actually, we had a really fabulous pad there. It was a penthouse kind of in a neighborhood called Sarrià in Barcelona. We had this magnificent view of the city. We could see Montjuïc and Tibidabo at the same time. We had like a 40 square meter terrace. It was really fabulous. But we discovered that we just weren't city people. And so we moved to Sitges in the middle of the pandemic. And we moved in a rush because the lockdown in Spain was very strict. And the minute they opened it up so that you can travel from town to town, we had that week, we had scheduled some appointments to come to Sitges, but there wasn't a lot on the market because I think in part because of the pandemic, people weren't really renting things and they were staying in place. The place that we found, the location was magnificent. I mean, Mark, we were surrounded by the sea. We could see the sea on two sides of the apartment. There was this really big, beautiful garden, big pool, but it was about a 15-20 minute walk outside of town. And we didn't really like living on the first floor. And so we stayed there about a year and a half or so. And then we moved to our current place now, which is a little bit closer to town. And we're up on the fourth floor and it's nice and quiet. It's even when there's Carnival and Bear Week and Pride, you hear the thump of the music, but it's not really very loud. So it's quite nice.
Gotcha. Gotcha. And is it walkable to everything where you are now?
Yeah, actually, that was one of our criteria is we didn't want to have a car. In California, we each had a car. And when we moved to Spain, we just didn't want to have a car. And so Sitges itself is not very large and very rarely take the bus in Sitges because it's so pleasant to walk around that I just walk. But to get into Barcelona, to go to Tarragona, to go to the airport, I have an option of taxi if I want to splurge or bus or train. And the train is like, I think I timed it. I think it's about 7 minute walk from here.
Wow,
so
that's
very
great.
Close. Yeah.
Leo, can you explain to our audience where Sitges is located in the realm of the entire country?
Yeah, so Sitges is about between 30 and 40 kilometers southwest of Barcelona. It's on the coast of Garraf. And it's really right in between Barcelona and Tarragona in Catalonia. It's really pretty magnificent. We have something like 11 or 13 beaches and a really wow. old church that looks like it's one of those churches with cannons on it, because it started as a fortress and then it became a church. And the town itself is like really magnificent. It's got a lot of modernista buildings. And so there's a history and sitges of people from the town going to America, North and South America, and then coming back with their riches and building these really big modernista palaces. So the Maricel Museum, for example, that you mentioned, is actually a modernista building. Strangely enough, it was built by an American artist as their home, his family home. Yeah. And they're called the Indianos because they went to the Indias, which was really the Americas at that time, and came back. So it's got all this really fantastic architecture to it as well. And it's got a big promenade that goes all the way down the beach that's lined with palm trees. Up until 2 days ago, I was still in shorts and a t-shirt. And here we are in wow. November 18th, 19th. Yeah. So last year it was January. And my husband and I were walking with a couple friends of ours and our dog and their dog, and we're all in shorts and a t-shirt walking along the beach.
I love it.
Pretty amazing. Yeah.
I love it. So is living in an LGBTQ community important to you? And is there such thing as that in Sitges, or is it just all live and let live? Does nobody care?
So yes, actually, for me, living in an LGBTQ community is incredibly important. It used to not be as important for me as it is now. I think as I'm getting older, I'm finding it to be more important. It's one of the deciding factors for us moving to Sitges. It's hard to find a small town on the Mediterranean coast, 20 minutes away from a major airport, that's also gay-friendly. And Sitges has all those things. The gay community here tends to be, I'd say, people in their 40s and up, mostly gay men, some lesbians as well, but mostly gay men in their 40s and up. But then also we have Pride. We have two different bear weeks. So I'm a bear, and it was really important for me that it be inclusive of everyone in the gay community, not just your gym bunnies.
Yeah.
And so I actually find that there's a fair amount of gay activity here. And at the same time, people in Sitges just don't really care so much about labeling people. And so there's this very free spirit. It's like you have a walk down the street and I'll run into people that are families, people that are single, people from Germany, from Korea, from the States, from all over the place. And so in that sense, it feels like a bigger town than it really is. I mean, you walk down the street any given day and you can hear half a dozen different languages.
Languages, yeah. It's like a melting pot.
It is.
So it kind of reminds me of, I don't know if you've ever been to P-Town, Provincetown, in the United States, in New England, in Massachusetts. It's because small town, quaint town, villagey mm-hmm. feel on the water. And it's just like live and let live. Like you see people walking up and down the streets and there's very little automobile traffic there. And it's just that everyone is pretty much gay.
Yeah.
So it's just like that free spirited, no one cares feel.
It's so I have a story. Sitges has Bear Week every year in September. And I used to live in our previous apartment. We lived in an area near Balmines, and Balmines Beach is the only nude beach in town. And during Bear Week, it's just covered in bear. and bears. And so I'm in the water and I'm swimming about and just minding my own business. And these two men on shore start arguing quite loudly. They start yelling at each other. I don't even know about what. And so somebody called the police. So the police in Catalonia come in two major flavors. There's La Policia, which is the local municipality has the police. And then there's Mossos. Mossos is the equivalent of their of the Catalonian state police. It's like the Carabinieri in Italy. So four Mossos, they always come in pairs. So two different sets of Mossos showed up. So you can imagine there were three men and a woman. And immediately they were surrounded by all these gay, naked men. And they start catcalling at them, making whistles, and because here's these men in uniform. And two of the – or three of the Mossos were just very business, like what's going on, who's doing what. But one of the Mossos was waving and smiling and winking back at people and just having – fun with the fact that all these gay men were ready to show him a little bit of bear love.
Yeah. Know? Yeah.
That's citrus for you.
That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. Yeah. I happen to, in fact, I was talking about Provincetown, P-Town in the U.S. Whenever I went, I wanted to go on Bear Week.
Oh,
because
yeah.
Because I thought it was the most friendliest time week that people could visit. It's just a bunch of bears, just very friendly and just having a lot of fun. So,
yeah, that's well. You should come to Sitges for Bear Week. It's the first week. It starts on the Thursday of the first week of September, and then it runs for, I think, either 10 or 12 days. But you can do Google search Sitges Bear Week every year. Come, let me know. We'll hang out. We'll grab a drink.
So does Sitges have like the biggest pride in Spain or?
No, actually the biggest pride in Spain is in Madrid. Yeah. And I think it might be the biggest pride in Europe. It's either there or Berlin maybe, but they do have a big pride. I don't know how many people come down for pride, but for Carnival, we had 280,000 people show up for Carnival. And if you consider Sitges has 30,000 people that live there.
I think I had some friends who vacationed in Sitges during, I think it was Bear Week. And it was just an amazing amount of people.
Yeah.
It was huge crowd.
Yeah.
How many, do you know how many people they get on Bear Week?
Usually, well, it's hard to tell. So usually they have between 12 and 15,000 bears that come and stay. In Sitges.
Wow.
But then there are a lot of people that come in for the day or come and stay with friends. So I think these are just what the hotels are reporting. There's actually, I believe, more people that show up than that. And they always have a bear village down by the beach. So it typically opens at night where people can go and party. I take my dog there because he loves people. And also when I take him there, I get a lot of attention because of my dog. So
it
makes us all happy.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, dogs are quite the attention getters.
That's right.
So I'm sure they have gay bars, don't they, in Sitges?
They do. They actually have, there's a square called Plaza de Industria. And we call it Judgment Square because there's a couple of bars that open up into the square. The most famous one is called Parrots. And so you walk down the street and you feel like you're being judged because on all sides of you, you have people sitting, drinking their drinks.
And everybody's watching.
Yeah. And now, but the thing is with the bars, it's just because – we have a high season and a low season. And so typically in the wintertime, a lot of the town closed. And so a lot of the gay bars will close during the wintertime because there's not enough traffic to keep them open. A lot of the hotels will close during the wintertime as well. So I definitely think that if you are coming and hanging out at a bar at night is important to you, then I would recommend coming in the spring and summertime because that's when they're open. Usually around May is when everything opens up again.
Speaking of closing down in the winter, what's the climate like? Is it, I mean, the summers I know are hot.
Yes.
And is it humid?
It is. As a matter of fact, we are talking about leaving Sitges in August and going and spending a month somewhere a little bit cooler and coming back, like not leaving Sitges permanently, but going out of town in August because it gets really hot and humid. So it will typically be anywhere from like 32 to 40 degrees. So
what's that in Fahrenheit?
It's anywhere from like 85 to 100 degrees, and it really depends on the day.
That's toasty.
It's toasty, and then 100 is rare. It's usually like high 80s to low 90s is about average in the summertime, but it's very humid. And then in the wintertime, well, I think occasionally it'll dip. It'll be a little bit chilly, but I want to say the average temperature in the winter is maybe between 50 and 60 degrees. So it doesn't really get very cold in the winter and the humidity goes away. And usually in the fall, other than in the middle of the winter, you can almost always walk around with t-shirts and shorts. So 9 months out of the year, I'm in a t-shirt.
Yeah, it doesn't sound like a bad winter at all.
No, not at all. Although it did hail last winter and it snowed last winter.
Whoa.
Yeah, but I use the term snow very lightly. The snow was melted before it hit the ground. It was still snowing, you know.
Yep. Yeah, actually, I've seen some hail here in Phoenix, which is really strange too.
Yeah.
Especially in the summer, it could get up here. It could get to 115, 120.
Oh my gosh. Yeah.
Yeah. But it's a dry heat, they say.
Yeah. I mean, hot is hot.
Right. No matter which way you look at it.
That's right.
So do you find it easy to make friends in Sitges? Like coming from the U.S., now you have an advantage because you know the language, Spanish, Catalan.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
Italian. You know quite a few languages, I understand.
Yeah.
So you have that advantage. Does your husband also speak Spanish and Catalan?
No.
Okay. But at least you have one.
We have one. He's learning Spanish. But as you say, my advantage is having a speaking Italian that did take some Spanish classes, but mostly I just start speaking and then people correct me and then I change and learn.
Yeah, you just pick it up.
I just pick it up. It's much easier. But I find that actually, so making friends in Barcelona was quite difficult. There, Catalans are not quick to make friends in general, not just with foreigners, but even with each other. I think that it takes a little bit of time to warm up to them and for them to warm up to you. In Barcelona, there's a lot of big transient community, not transient in the sense of homeless, but in the sense that people come for a year, 2 years, and then they leave.
And go.
Yeah. So there's this real sense of, yeah. And I can imagine if you're local, you're thinking, well, I'll be your friend, but then a year later, you're gone.
Yeah.
And Catalans take friendship very seriously. What I found is that in some ways are like Italians. Like if you make a friend with an Italian, you're friends for life. I have friends in Italy that I went to school with. I've known for 30, 40 years. And the same thing here in Catalonia, when you have a Catalan friend, like they are your friend for life.
Friend.
Yeah. They're like not acquaintance. They're
a friend that will go out of their way to do anything for you.
Yes. And the first time we got invited to some friends of ours who are Catalan to their house for dinner, I was like, I almost started crying. I was like, oh my God, we've made it. We're in the friend circle. And so, but as a consequence, most of our friends here in Sitges are other immigrants. So people from the UK, people from Canada. We have friends from America. We have friends from a little bit all over the place. We do have some Catalan friends as well as some Spanish friends that are not from Catalonia that moved here. And then, of course, Italians. It's like I hear someone speaking Italian, and if I see them more than a few times, I know they live here, and I walk up to them and introduce myself.
Yeah, that's great.
Yeah.
That's great. So do you think speaking Spanish or Catalonian is very important living there? You did mention, well, I did mention in your bio that you did think that the language, wherever you're going, is important. But is it even more important because of Catalonia?
I think yes and no. Definitely Spanish is important. Everybody in Spain speaks Spanish. And Catalan, I think, is important to learn as well. But mostly for me, I study it and learn it because I want to, not because I feel like I
have to.
Yeah. Also because there are some Catalans that don't speak Catalan. And also, like any language, there's a fair number of differences depending on where you're from in Catalonia. There could be different dialects. What the interesting thing is that Catalonia has this independista movement. They have this independence movement. And a lot of Catalans will refer to Catalonia as a country and are really want to be independent of Spain. And then there are some Catalans that don't give a shit and don't care about that. And they want to be part of a larger world stage. But what I found for me is it doesn't matter what the person's political beliefs are. If you try to speak to someone in Catalan, they will immediately warm up to you. Even though my Catalan is terrible, it's awful, but I've had the most interesting conversations with people. And then they will try to speak to me in English. And then, so I went to a doctor, for example, who it's hard for me to communicate to doctors in English, much less in Spanish or in Catalan. And so I asked him immediately, do you speak English? He said, no. I said, do you speak Italian? He said, no. He said, but I speak Catalan. And so he was speaking to me in Catalan and I was answering him in Italian because they're so similar that we can understand 80% of what we're saying. It was remarkable.
I would think it's close to Spanish because you are in Spain.
Yeah.
And I would think it's close to Spanish. Is it similar?
Yes. So there are a lot of similarities to Spanish, French, and Italian. And I'm not really sure why. I don't know the history of the Catalan language. I know that Catalonia itself used to be control different parts of Italy, and I think they also control different parts of France through invasion. There's still parts in Italy that speak Catalan, for example. I think in Sardinia and different parts of Campania, I think they speak Catalan. And so it stands to reason in my mind that the languages influenced each other in some way. But I actually find Catalan to be, as an Italian speaker, I find Catalan to be easier to understand than Castellano, than Spanish. And I don't know why. It just is. As a matter of fact, sometimes I hear people speaking in Catalan and I mistakenly think they're speaking in Italian.
Italian.
Yeah.
And when I hear Portuguese, I'm, wow. Is that a combination of French and Italian and Spanish and everything all mushed together there? I wonder about that too.
Yeah, I don't know. Portuguese is a mystery to me. For whatever reason, my head can't wrap itself around Portuguese. I can't understand it. I think I have a theory. I suspect because I find Portuguese to be a really beautiful language, and Portuguese men I find to be really sexy. And so when they speak to me, I think my mind just doesn't hear anything. It just goes somewhere else, right?
Yeah.
But I've never been able to understand Portuguese, and yet Portuguese people can understand Italian very easily.
Thanks. Very interesting. So tell us what the local economy is like. Can you provide examples to our audience about housing costs, both renting, possibly purchasing, electric bills, water bills, gas, taxes, stuff like that? And
sure.
And also tell us about the water. I get concerned now about when I talk to people from different countries and different places. I never really had it on my mind before, but I think of climate change now. And I think of, do they have enough water? Do they have flooding? How is that all into the equation?
So Spain is mostly plateau. It's mostly arid. It's funny, if you look at like a 3D geographic map of Spain, you'll see like this big ring of mountains, and then the center is all this flat plateau. I do think that Spain has water issues. I see commercials all the time that talk about conserving water in Spain. I don't know how bad it is. I suspect that it's probably not as bad as California, for example. But it's definitely a concern enough that the government puts out commercials around conserving water. Economically, so actually I was pleasantly surprised in terms of in the Barcelona area, the economy is relatively diverse. So I have friends here that are doctors, lawyers, that work in IT, that work in construction, that are artists. So there's a good diversity. I myself work in IT, and the IT sector here is pretty strong. Now, in terms of cost of living in Sitges, if you were to rent, for example, a two-bedroom apartment, let's say two-bedroom, one-bath apartment, it really depends on where. So most of the expats want to live in the old town. They want to live within a couple blocks of the beach, and that's where you'll pay a premium. So two-bedroom apartment here will cost you anywhere between 1,200 and 1,600 euros. And of course, it can go up to 6,000 or 7,000 euros if you want a luxury apartment. It depends on whether you have a garage, whether you have a pool in your building. So it depends on a lot of amenities. But then if you go to the other side of the train tracks, literally, there's the part of town that's called Poblesec, which is where most of the locals live. And that two-bedroom apartment that costs you 1,500 euros in by the beach will now cost you 1,000 euros on the other side. But what, as expats, particularly American expats, we tend to like things a little bit. We like more space than the average Spaniard. And so if you're renting a two bedroom for 1300, it's very basic. We have our flat is quite a bit more expensive. It's 1800 a month for our flat, but it's a duplex and it's got its own, not its own, but it's got a pool, a community garden with a pool and a garage. And so I would say that for most Americans, to expect to spend between 1500 and 2000 a month for an apartment here. In terms of utilities, electricity is very expensive. But what we did is we got a fixed contract for electricity. So we pay a fixed amount every month, regardless of how much we spend. And that fixed amount is based on the average spend over the last year, the average that you've consumed. Now, we were fortunate enough to lock that rate in before electric prices spiked. So right now, we're capped at around 98 euros a month for electricity, whereas we have friends that are paying sometimes 200 or 300 euros a month for electricity. And then also gas is probably the next biggest thing. For gas, it's not unusual to pay 100, 150 euros a month. I don't mean gas for your car. I mean gas for the house. And then water is probably another 50 or 60 euros a month for two people. So all told, I would say we pay about 300 euros a month in utility costs.
Utilities.
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess. I guess here too, I can go through in the summer, easy 250 for electricity with the air conditioning on all the time.
Yeah.
So do you have air conditioning?
We do. It's not central heating, or I'm sorry, it's not central air. It's air conditioning the wall units.
Yeah.
And that's in part why our electricity bills are a little bit lower, because people that have central air, it's more expensive because they're cooling their entire
house. It's on everywhere. Yeah.
Yeah. And I mean, we have friends that pay more. We just got lucky that we got set charge every month. And also bearing in mind that Sitges is one of the most expensive parts in Spain. Spain in general is not a very expensive country to live in. Valencia, which was our second option, is probably only 60 or 80% of the cost of Sitges.
Yeah, Valencia is like the third largest city in Spain.
Yeah, and it's beautiful.
Yeah, I can't wait to visit. So. Yeah. Why do you think, so you say Sitges is one of the most expensive areas in Spain, I guess, along with Barcelona. Is it because everybody's going there? It's so attractive to people?
Yeah. I mean, it used to be a tiny fishing village. And up until the 80s, no one really knew about Sitges. Also because there was really no easy way to get here. The train line hadn't been built yet. The freeway, you could only get here by car. And then the train arrived, and then people started learning about Sitges, and slowly it started getting more and more popular. And now they have an international film festival. They have Carnival and Pride. They have every weekend there's some festival or other. There was a Celtic festival a couple weeks ago. And so it's on more and more people's radar. And also, I think it's just such an enjoyable place to live to begin with. But it really appeals quite strongly to gay people, LGBTQA plus people. It's got so many things going for it that I think I'm surprised that more people don't live in Sitges than they do. And I hear all the time when people visit, they're like, oh my God, I wish I would love to live here. Marry a Spaniard and come move to Sitges.
It sounds amazing. It really does.
Yeah.
So where you live, how's the infrastructure? Can you, from your house, walk to the supermarket or the market, to your doctor or dentist, to a hospital if you need one? I mean, can you get there really fairly quickly? Is everything pretty much walkable?
It is walkable. So there's no hospital in Sitges. There are several medical centers. So if you have to go, and there's what they call CAP, which is the Catalan, I forget what the CAP stands for, but it's essentially their public hospitals and their public administration. And so the CAP in Sitges, though, is more like a first aid. It's not a full-blown hospital. So the nearest hospital is in Sampera, which is about 15-minute car ride away. So for non-emergencies, there's a medical center right across the street from my house. I go there. My dentist lives in or works in Vilanova y la Geltrú, which is just down the street. I hop on a train and 5 minutes I'm there. So most things are easy, especially for non-emergency things. For an emergency, if you have to get to a hospital, your best bet regardless is to dial 112. And the ambulances here fast. They will be here in a few minutes. They'll put you, and they all speak English, and they'll put you in the ambulance and drive you off.
You said it was 50 minutes to the nearest hospital?
No, 15.
Oh, 15. Yeah, that makes me feel better.
Yeah, it's about 15 minutes. You're never in Catalonia. The infrastructure here is amazing. You're never too far from anything. And so, and then in addition to that, the government is like, hey, you know what? Inflation is crazy. It's really impacting everyone. We're going to make the trains free for the rest of the year.
That's unbelievable.
And it gets even better. And then they said, did we say the rest of the year? We meant the rest of this year and all of next year.
Oh my goodness.
Local commuter and medium trains are free.
Wow.
Now, you still have to buy a ticket. But what happens is after you ride the train a certain number of times, you get a refund. And the tickets are only 10 euros. So even if you don't get a refund, you've ridden. So, I mean, I ride the train probably a couple times a week. I don't ride it as much as a lot of people do. I mean, it's hard to beat that.
Yeah.
And then shopping wise, it's interesting because I just did a bunch of shopping today and I did like my American style shopping. I grabbed my cart. You know, those, you see those movies with old ladies that push their little trolleys?
Yeah.
Everybody here has one.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. So I grabbed my little trolley. My little grandma cart, me and my husband, and we walked to the pharmacy because we needed to get some medication. And then we stopped at a coffee cafe, and I had my cafe con leche and a little Catalan pastry. And then we walked to Mercadona, which is like the big
market
that they have a number of them, but that's the big one here in Sitges. But usually, and so that's unusual. And so we loaded up our car and we spent like 80 euros and got a week's worth of food, which is still surprises
it's
me.
It's nothing.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. We spend 200.
I know. And I've still every once in a while, I'm like, did they say, right? Is that 180 or 80? Yeah. Oh, okay. All right. Here.
Seriously.
You know, take it before you change your mind.
Yeah. And that's not, that doesn't include my Costco bill.
Yeah, exactly. And here there's no Costco, but usually I don't shop like that. Usually what I do is there's the shop down the street that's for the fruits and vegetables. And I like to go there. I have a rapport with the lady that owns the shop. So the other day I was like, I'm looking for jackfruit. I can't find jackfruit. She's like, come back tomorrow. I'll have it tomorrow. And because then she goes to her distributors and she gets, you know, what you want. And also most of the fruits and the vegetables, not all of them, but most of them are grown here in Catalonia, so they're local. And then I'll go to the baker. There's a couple bakers here where I buy my bread. And then there's a place further down the street where it's got more like cheeses and things like that. And so that's typically what I'll do for my shopping. And a lot of times I'm not even shopping actively. I'm just walking through town and I will notice somebody has some fresh watermelon sitting outside and the smell will hit my nose. I'll walk in. Next thing you know, I'm walking out with a couple bags full of fruits and vegetables. That's usually what I do.
That sounds so refreshing to me. And I'm going back to my childhood days and cook. And in the 60s, I remember, and even in the 70s somewhat, you would go shopping. You wouldn't really go to a supermarket per se.
Yeah.
You can, but there was the butcher, there was mm-hmm. the baker, there was the fruit and vegetables store. There was even, like you say, there was even a cobbler or that fixed your shoes. Everything was a specialty store, and it wasn't these big conglomerate Costco supermarket jumbo stores. So it's refreshing because everything is fresh. Everything is walking distance and you buy for now. You don't buy for a month. You buy for now. You buy for a day. And also for the refrigerators in Europe or in Spain are a lot smaller than they are in the US. So you can only fit a certain amount of food in there. So I really find that refreshing.
I've discovered it's my favorite way to shop because also the folks that see you repeatedly, they start to know your taste a little bit. And so they might be like, oh, hey, you know what? I got some fresh peaches that came in because the lady down the street knows that I love peaches. And also they're more knowledgeable about what they're selling. There's a wine shop down the street. The gentleman there, all he does is sell wine. And it's wine from all over the world. But of course, there's a big section that is Catalan wines. And you can go and have this conversation with him rather than going to a place like Costco and being presented with this gigantic aisle of wine and having to fumble your way through it. You can literally walk up to the guy at the wine shop and say, I'm looking for white wine. I like it a little bit more dry or a little bit more fruity or this or that or whatever. And he'll present you like three or four different options. And with €6, €7, you can buy a really good bottle of wine here.
See, I miss that. I miss that local. You just walk into a shop and start talking to the owner instead of one employee amongst hundreds that in a huge place. I really enjoy that. I can't wait to visit and see that and experience that again.
Nice.
So tell us, what's the arts and culture scene like? Does Sitges have, I know it's a small town, but does it have any arts and culture?
Yes. As a matter of fact, our first friend here in Sitges, we met her because we had an American friend who came to visit us in Barcelona from California. And he actually went to Sitges a few days before we did. And so we came and met him. And he introduced us to an artist here. But she's not the only one. There are a fair number of local artists. And it's everything from prints to painters, sculptors. There's a pretty good and vibrant art scene. There's an art fair that happens once a year that is specifically Catalan artists. There is a music festival, a Catalan music festival. So there's a lot of festivals that are specific to, you know, Catalan history, Catalan music, that kind of thing. There's also a number of different museums. And so the Maricel Museum, for example, that started off as fishermen houses. And then this rich American artist, I forget his name, bought all these houses, fishermen's houses, in the early 1900s, tore them down and built this gigantic mansion. And then he realized that he didn't have a place for his art, the poor guy. I felt really bad for him. So what did he do? He built a whole nother mansion just to store his art, but he didn't want to have to walk across the street through with the commoners from his house to his art gallery. So he built an air bridge between the two. And it's like this iconic picture of Sitges now. When you look up Sitges on Google, you will see this white air bridge. It looks almost like something you'd see in Venice. And so then he left. He decided he had enough of Sitges. He didn't really like it here to begin with. I don't know why. I think probably in the early 1900s, it was much different. And he left. And then, of course, the Spanish Civil War happened and all kinds of things happened. And these buildings went into disrepair. And then the city rebuilt them and restored them. And they are fantastic. They're really magnificent. And what I like also about Catalan aesthetics is there's a lot of influence from, certainly from Modernista, from Gaudi and those types of artists, but also from Moorish and Arabic and French, and it all comes together. So you see these bright orange and blue and yellow tiles with these Arab arches with this Modernista window. And so it's really quite amazing. So the art scene here is quite good, as is the music scene. And then, of course, go to Barcelona. If you want to see an amazing music museum, go to the Catalan Museum of Music in Barcelona. It's phenomenal. The building itself is a piece of art.
Wow. Yeah. What would it be? Gays have to have their arts and culture.
That's we gotta sure. have, and I like if we like even just looking around my place, most of the things that we have here are things that we bought locally. That are there. This artist that I was mentioning, she has this style where she uses beer bottle caps to create sculptures, spiders, octopuses, lips, the Pink Panther, Johnny Depp, whatever. And it's really amazing. And I will walk into my friend's house and they'll have one of her pieces hanging.
Wow. Yeah. That's great.
Yeah.
That's great. How about food? Are you a foodie? For one, I love food.
What I have kind of the restaurants? Waistline to prove it.
What kind of restaurants or what do they have as far as international cuisine, if any?
So I think I might piss a lot of people off by saying this, but I'm not overly impressed by Catalan food. I do like tapas, but tapas is not specifically Catalan. I do like paella, but paella is from Valencia as well. Catalan food is good, but it's
what
not.
What is Catalan food?
So there are several dishes, Catalan dishes, that are like iconic Catalan dishes. One is calçots. So calçots are these onions, spring onions that are grilled, that are really tasty. They get charred on the outside, but sweet on the inside. And you eat it with like a sauce. They have these big festivals when calçots are in season. They also have like some types of sausages that are specific to Catalan, some stews and things like that. But generally, Catalan fare is relatively, it's good. They have like fresh foods, fresh fish, for example. Fish is, we're on the coast. It's a big thing to eat here. But it's not, it's missing kind of the wow factor for me, Catalan food. But the food scene in Catalonia and in Spain is quite good. There are restaurants. It's not, when I compare the variety of food to like the Bay Area, they don't have as much variety, but there are very few places in the world that have as much variety as the Bay Area. Yeah, but you can't find, so we have Thai food, we have Indian food, pizza, that type of international flair. If you went to a traditional Catalan restaurant, you would find things like rabbit. You would find things like tapas as well, because even though it's not from Catalonia, it's a tradition here. Different stews, sobrasada, which is like a type of sausage. So, and there's a sausage here that is called, oh, I forget what it's called, but it's quite good. And also, of course, bravas as well. Oh, botifarra is a Catalan sausage, and it's very tasty. And so you might get that with some potatoes. Now, interestingly enough, there's a really strong vegetarian and vegan and clean food scene here in Catalonia. And so there's a lot of really good vegetarian restaurants, which was quite surprising to me.
Interesting.
Yeah. And I myself don't eat a lot of meat. I waver. One morning I wake up and I'm like, I'm vegetarian. And the next minute I wake up and I'm like, give me that bacon.
Yeah. Yeah. I very rarely eat red meat myself.
Yeah.
Have you ever been to Andalusia, like down in Malaga area?
I have. I went to Malaga 30 years ago, I want to say.
It's been a while. I was 40. Yeah, would you say, do you remember the food scene there as compared? Because I understand the food scene there now has been really taken off and really great as well.
I don't remember the food scene. I can say, so most recently, we went to Madrid and Valencia, and also Girona. And the food scene there is in all three of those places is really good.
Great.
I think in general in Spain, the food scene has really taken off. Yeah. And Sitges is a small town. So in small towns, it's harder to find like really good food. And yet there is good food here and there's a good variety. If you like fish, there's so many good fish places. There's a lot of good tapas and paella places. The problem with Sitges is it is so heavily dependent on tourists that you find a lot of restaurants that serve bad food that are targeted towards tourists. And so it's hard to figure out when you walk in sometimes, which kind of restaurant are you going to?
Do they still have the hours? Like, do they still do siesta in Sitges, and restaurants typically open at 8 o'clock or later?
Yeah. A couple days ago, it was 7:30 and we're like, we're hungry. Early. Let's go out for dinner. And we had to look online to see which restaurants were open.
And yeah. It's usually the tourist restaurants that are open earlier.
It's usually the tourist restaurants or it's the non-Catalan restaurants. So we ended up going to an Indian restaurant that was opening at 7:30 on the dot. We're hungry. Let's go.
Yep. I'm with you.
Yeah.
Because by like 10 o'clock, I'm in my first dream. So, Leo, tell us about public transportation, the traffic situation, and accessibility to the airport.
So, traffic here is congested. There's a lot of it, particularly in Barcelona. In Sitges, not so much, actually. Most of the town is traffic-free. So, the majority of the town is pedestrian only, other than like delivery vehicles. And then if you do have a car, things like insurance and gasoline are quite expensive, and there are tolls if you go on freeways and things like that. But the infrastructure itself is quite good. The infrastructure to get to the city, to get to Barcelona from Sitges, I have two options. One is I can grab a bus, which takes anywhere from 35 to 45 minutes. And the other is that I can hop on a train, which takes about the same amount of time, but puts you in a different part of town. And both of the bus stops and the train stops are 10 to about 10 minute walk from my house. So very close. And then the airport is extremely close and very accessible. And again, you can hop on a bus, a train, or a cab. Of course, cabs will get you there faster, but are also more expensive. But if you hop on a bus from here, it's about a half an hour away to the airport. So it's very convenient. Transportation in general is quite good, public transportation between buses and trains. And then in Barcelona, you also have the underground, you have the subway in addition to the train system. But essentially, on a train, you can go to almost anywhere you want to go. And if the train doesn't get you there, undoubtedly, there's a bus that will get you there. Now, Bill and I don't drive since we've moved here. We decided to ditch a car and not even drive. And so the few times where we have been in a need for a car, we've simply have hired one. There's plenty of folks that are happy to drive you around for a day. And that's cheaper than renting a car in some cases, or certainly than owning a car.
Okay. So tell us, do you have the accessibility to, like, if you wanted to go to Madrid, you have to take the train into Barcelona and then transfer for a train to Madrid? But
yes.
Okay.
Yes, that's right. And actually, it's funny, we just did that in, it's been a year now. We did that in October. So it's been just a little over a year. And you take a local train from Sitges to Barcelona Sants train station. That's about a half hour ride. And then from there, we hopped on a high speed train that was the most fabulous.
That's what I wanted to
been on. Smooth. Oh my God. And if you book far enough in advance, the tickets can be as cheap as €6, €9. So they can be really cheap if you book several months ahead. But when I travel on a train, I splurge. I don't want to be sitting near children, and I want it to be relatively quiet. So we always buy a first class ticket. And in some cases, you have what they call silent cars, where it's meant for people who want silence. And so we did, for example, just a couple months ago, we went to Marseille, to southern France, and we again took a high speed train. It took us 6 hours, I think. Five hours to go from Barcelona to Marseille on a train, which is still, and it's still faster than if we flew, if you take in consideration going to the airport and lines and that kind of stuff. And we're in first class, and I think it was like 130 euros a piece because we bought them relatively late. Otherwise, it would have been cheaper. And actually, one of the things I love about Europe is there's a real push to take fewer planes. I think France banned any flight that if you could take a train there in 3 hours, 4 hours or less, you can't fly there. And yeah, so like 80% of their domestic flights are canceled.
Wow.
Yeah. And this free trains thing gimmick in Spain now has been a big success. And so just here locally, the local train route that I take to Barcelona, they're adding 15 new trains to the route because so many more people are taking trains.
Yeah, I'm looking forward to that, taking the train. In fact, if we go from here, Phoenix to Spain, it's going to be Phoenix, Madrid, I believe, which is pretty much most inexpensive, and most flights go into Madrid. And then we're going to take a train, I think, from Madrid to Valencia. And then Valencia, will go from Valencia to Alicante. And then from Alicante, we want to go down to Malaga. So we have to go back up to Madrid and back to Malaga that way. But
yeah, that's train travel. You sometimes have to take a more circuitous route. But it's possible that there will be local trains that go from Alicante to Malaga and not a high-speed train, because from Barcelona to Valencia, for example, there's no high-speed train. You have to take a slower train. I don't know why. I think it's just
because they're in process, the route yet. Actually. I think they're going to be doing Malaga-Valencia or Malaga-Barcelona high-speed. I think it's coming. So, yeah, I think I've read an article. Someone sent me an article, which I'm looking forward to. So if you're still working, so you work from home, so you don't have the travel, you don't have the travel thing. So I was going to ask, if you worked, do most people, since they're retirees or expats, they don't work in Sitges? Basically, they're out in Barcelona working?
There's a combination of different scenarios. So in our friends circle, we have friends that are retired that don't work at all, which
jealous
I'm
me,
incredibly
me and you both.
Jealous of. Yeah. And then we have folks that are like me that work from home. And then we also have friends that commute. And so I do go into the office in Barcelona, but infrequently. I'm there maybe once a month. I actually go to – the last time I went into work, I went into our office in Paris, and that was 3 months ago, I think. So I have – but now I'm going to the office next week. So it's very rare, but when I do go, it's relatively easy. The only thing I am not a huge fan of is once I get to the train station, it's about a half hour walk to the office. But when it's a beautiful day and I walk past Casa Payó and Casa Mila.
You don't mind.
And I can't complain.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what's the crime like in Sitges? Is it petty theft? One good thing is you don't allow guns in Spain, so mass shootings are pretty non-existent, but tell us about the crime.
Yeah. Most of the crime in Sitges is petty theft. There's actually a fair amount of pickpocketing, and there are occasionally people will get mugged. I've never actually seen it happen, and it's never happened to me, but occasionally I'll see on Facebook on one of my Sitges groups, someone will say, oh, I got mugged last night here or there. most of the crimes are crimes of opportunity. So someone is walking down the street, they've maybe had a little too much to drink, their phone is hanging out of their back pocket, and it gets lifted right out of their back pocket. Yeah. Occasionally, people will have their bikes stolen or they'll have their car broken into. But bearing in mind that I moved from Oakland, California, the crime that we have here in Sitges is nothing. I mean, I will literally, sometimes I can't sleep, so I'll go for a walk at midnight, one in the morning. I always feel safe. Now, I stay away from groups of, if I see a large group of teenagers.
Yeah, you just have to be aware of your surroundings.
But I've never been harassed.
Yeah.
Exactly. Like any other place. Even in Barcelona, I felt relatively safe. There are some folks that are, like, there's a small gypsy population. And for the most part, they'll leave you alone. I mean, gypsies are just like anyone else. There's good gypsies, there's bad gypsies. Most of the gypsies that I see are sitting on a corner begging. But occasionally they will pickpocket you. But I think the majority of the crime is actually by young Catalans, teenage boys mostly, that just don't have anything to do. So they run around and they pick pockets and they steal stuff from stores and things like that, shoplifting and things
like
that.
So you haven't experienced any homophobic crimes at all, right?
Well, I was once in a park walking my dog in the middle of the day, and there were these three or four teenagers, and they were high out of their minds. And one of them started calling me maricón, which is Spanish for fag, and got a little close to me. But you know, I'm a big guy. And then I was like, this is like a 15-year-old kid. I'm a 50-year-old man. I'm not going to get in a smackdown with a 15-year-old kid. I know better than this. I should just walk away. And that was a little unsettling, to be honest. But most Catalans are relatively open-minded and welcoming. I think every single Catalan that I've ever met, that I've actually met, they don't care if you're gay, they don't care if you're Muslim, they don't care if you're black or white or Asian. They just tend to be relatively open to these things, even though it's juxtaposed with this general feeling of they can be a little bit insular. Most Catalans are not rude to you. That's not in their nature to be rude. They just are not overly effusive. And to the extent that, so we had neighbors in Barcelona, I would say hello to this neighbor, downstairs neighbor, almost every day. And she never once said hello back to me. And in Italian culture, I'm taught that it's rude not to say hello to someone. If you, even if you don't know them, you say hello to them. And so I was in Rome visiting my mom and my sister. And I'm walking down the street. And I have my head down a little bit. And this old couple is walking by me, and they both say, buongiorno to me. They're both like, good morning. And it startled me. And I realized how different
the cultures
it is and how refreshing it was. Yeah. And even though, like I said, Catalonia is like any other place. There are people that are prejudiced, but for the most part, people here are not. They're just more reserved, especially compared to an Italian who wants to hug everybody. Catalans are not like that.
So tell us about the healthcare. What's the healthcare like as compared to the US? Can you give us a couple of examples? Hospitals, doctors, do you need to know Spanish or Catalan to be treated?
So I would say, so you do not need to know Spanish or Catalan to be treated. If you show up at a hospital in Catalonia, they will treat you no matter what. They might bill you for it, but they will treat you. During COVID, the Catalan government took the stance of if you're living in Catalonia, you qualify for a vaccine, whether you're a citizen, a resident, illegal, we don't care. Show up, we'll make an appointment for you, we'll give you vaccination. In that way, I find it to be very humanitarian in terms of the medical system. the hospitals here are quite good. They are on par with American hospitals. So, of course, you find some hospitals that are not very good and some that are. Now, in order for you to qualify for public health care in Catalonia, you have to be a resident. And in order for you to become a resident, you have to have health care. So what most people do is they get private insurance. And then after they're here for 3 months, they qualify for public insurance. In my case, because I had a job and I'm an EU citizen and I could show that I have a contract and that I'm paying Social Security, I got public health care right away. Now, there's a couple of advantages to having private health care. One is that you can call them and ask for an English-speaking physician or French or German or whatever language you speak. And there's someone on the other line that can help you. You can also do online consultations with people and things like that. And it's cheap. So why pay 130 euros for my medical insurance, which covers me and my husband, and it's medical and dental. And also drugs, prescription drugs are a lot cheaper. So Bill, my husband's asthma medication was costing us about $80 a month in the States. The same medication here is 4 euros. So it's a lot cheaper and it's a lot more accessible. Now, I actually had COVID a while ago, and in addition to having it now, I had it a while ago as well. And as a result, I had a blood clot in my leg, and I woke up one day and I literally fell over. I put pressure on my leg and fell. I was like, what the hell is going on? I had this blood clot. So I went to the doctor. I got a sonogram. And then I was put on like this medication. I had surgery. I got another sonogram. The most I paid was 100 euros for my medication. The surgery was free. The sonograms were free. It was all covered. Now, if I went through public healthcare, I might have had to wait a couple of months for all of that. But because I was seen by a private physician who could then say he's got a blood clot, he needs surgery, I got my surgery right away in a public hospital. But it was my private physician that came to the public hospital to perform the surgery. So it's very efficient. And we have people here that are diabetic, friends that are diabetic. We have friends that have high blood pressure, that have had cancer and all kinds of things. And in general, when I tell people that I had to take my husband to the emergency room one day in California, when I tell people, Catalans here, that we went to the emergency room in our network and we still ended up paying $1,000 for 4 hours in the emergency room, their jaws drop. They can't believe that. Yeah. They're like, wait, what? Not even if you're uninsured will you get a bill that
Do you know morning. Anything about pre-existing conditions? Because usually in the public and the private system, they're insurance companies and they don't allow pre-existing conditions. So how does that work when you're trying to get a visa for the first year and you need to be on the private insurance before going on to the public with any pre-existing conditions?
Yeah, so there are – so I have friends that actually recently moved to Portugal. And they're both in their mid-60s. They both have pre-existing conditions. And they were in a situation where they had to have medical insurance. So you can get it. It's just a little bit more expensive. And so they told me that they pay about 200 euros each a month because they both have pre-existing conditions. But they also have incredibly good health insurance. And so here I think it's probably the same. When I applied for my health for my medical coverage here, they asked me if I had pre-existing conditions. And I told them, look, I had COVID, and because I switched coverage at one point. And so I told them I had COVID. I had this blood clot. At the time, I had prostatitis. So I came clean with all of that. And it was still 137 euros a month. So they will cover you. A lot of times what they'll say is, if you have a pre-existing condition, they'll say, we won't cover you for the first 90 days. You have to be insured with us for 90 days. So it really depends on on the company. But also you can, so I recall my friend saying that they kept their Medicare insurance and that Medicare will cover them in Europe as well.
I have to check into that because I just signed up for Medicare.
Yeah. Yeah. So I would check into all these things, but and the general viewpoint in Europe is that it's inhumane to deny someone medical insurance. They just might make you pay more for it. So instead of paying 137 euros or whatever it is for two people,
each.
You might pay 200 euros.
But you
each.
Still can get it.
Yeah.
Okay.
But you still get it.
Do you think there's a sufficient amount of doctors to patients?
Yeah, actually more so than in the States. When I look at the doctors that are available to me through Sanitas, so my insurance is Sanitas, just here in Catalonia, there's hundreds of them. And that does not include all of the public physicians. And also most physicians, so for example, my internal medicine doctor only works 2 days a week at the clinic that I go to. And then he works a couple of days in a public hospital. And then he does. So a lot of physicians will work in a variety of different places. And then some have their own private roles. But what I find also here is that the preventative care is better. So you can go to a pharmacist and you can say, look, I have a tooth that's bothering me that's this, or I have a pain here that's that. And pharmacists can actually they can do a quick assessment and they can prescribe you certain medications.
Wow.
So long as it's not antibiotics,
narcotics
that have to come from doctors. So I've gone to a pharmacist. Like today, I went to a pharmacist because I had a tooth pulled by a dentist and I feel like it's not healing correctly. And she's like, oh, I know exactly what that is. Put this cream on and it'll pull the seal. It'll seal everything and blah, blah, blah. I put it on once today and sure enough, already it's much better. So you don't have to go to
blood
a doctor.
Pressure medicine or cholesterol. I wonder if you still need to go to a doctor for that because it's so common.
So this is what I would recommend. Take your bottle
and bring it to the pharmacy.
We actually did this today. We took a bottle and we brought it to the pharmacy and they're like, oh, we don't have that exact thing, but let me check the ingredients. And they're like, oh, this is for X, Y, and Z. And we have this. It's just under a different name.
Interesting.
And they'll give it to you. Yeah. I have a blood thinner that I take because of my blood clot. And so I went to the pharmacist today and Bill said, yeah, but don't you need the prescription? I said, oh, I'll just bring them the bottle and let's see. And I did. And
that's incredible. That sounds, yeah. Yeah, we could only, it is. Yeah,
it's
it
much more humane.
Is. That's the difference.
Yeah. And it's like that in every European country.
It's just something just I can't really grasp because this is the only way of life I've known throughout my life. So it's strange for me.
Sure.
Okay. So what do you wish that was in Sitges that you don't have that you might have elsewhere? Do you miss anything?
Mexican food and Korean food.
So Mexican food constantly comes up throughout Europe.
I miss it. I love Mexican food and it's hard to find. It's really hard to find here. And Korean food. You can find Japanese food.
They say Chinese food is not common really either.
Chinese. It's not as common as in the States. You can find it. The quality is not as good. Surprisingly, they have really good quality Japanese and Thai food. But Chinese food, the quality is not quite so good. Yeah. and Mexican food. I went to a Mexican restaurant the other day and I was like, what is this? It was like a tortilla. It was like white rice wrapped in a tortilla.
Yeah.
What the hell is this? It's not Mexican food.
Exactly.
Give me something spicy.
So getting back to residency for a moment, how do you obtain a visa? Is it through your consulate in the States or?
Yes. So if you are not an EU citizen, contact the Spanish consulate nearest to you. You have to start the process in the States. You cannot start the process in Spain, in part because there's no consulates in Spain. Obviously, it's their country. But also, they don't want people coming to Spain for vacation and being like, oh, I think I'll move here. So as I understand it, a non-lucrative visa, if you're retired or if you can show that you don't need to work, that you have sufficient funds, those types of visas are very easy to get. You just have to – Spanish bureaucracy, it's slow. You have to fill out forms.
More forms.
And use the right color paperclip on the right side, then more forms. But you will get it. I actually would recommend finding an immigration lawyer that can help you through some of these things. So if you're doing non-lucrative, it should be easy. If you want to work in Spain, that's a whole nother ball game. And so in that case, you would have to apply. Generally, you would have to get a job offer from a company that would sponsor you. But the easiest way to get to Spain is as a student. If you enroll in a university in Spain, you can live here for up to 2 years, I believe. And then once you're here, you can apply for other types of visas. At that point, you could say, yeah, but now I want to retire here or whatever. But talk to a lawyer. The thing that I wish I knew before coming here is the tax laws in Spain, because there's this thing called the Beckham Law, where if you register for it for the first 5 years, Spain won't tax your international income and will only tax your whatever you make in Spain at 19%. I did not know this. And having a house that I rent in the US is foreign income that is taxed at a Spanish rate. I wish I'd known this, because you only have 6 months to register
for
it.
Luck.
After that, you can't do it. Yeah, and it's ridiculous because you go to file your taxes and that's the first time you hear about this law.
No.
And then you're like, well, can I do it now? No, too late. You've been here 6 months and a day. You can't register.
Good to know. Now. Good information.
So, yeah, find out about taxes. Because the other thing is, as an American citizen, you have to continue paying taxes in the U.S. or filing them, at least in the U.S. But there are double taxation laws which prevent – so let's say that you get taxed at 19% in Spain on something and you declare that income in the U.S., you declare what you also paid in tax and you only pay the higher of the two. So if in the U.S. you would have paid 12% on that, but you already paid 19, there's no additional tax. So make sure that you
understand. They also have a wealth tax as well. In Spain.
In Catalonia, in Malaga, I don't know if they have one. In Madrid, they don't have one. Yeah, but
okay.
Yeah. The wealth tax is on an individual basis, and also you get to deduct like a €500,000 for your primary home, and so let's say that you and your husband own a home that's at $1 million, but it's individual. So half of that is yours and half is his.
Deducted.
So it's immediately deducted. Yeah. And then the tax is only on, I think, like €600,000 or €700,000 or more.
I think it's
you start
seven.
To pay a tax.
Yeah.
Or seven, something like that. But what's in your 401k, what's in your IRA is not taxable until
so
you start
income.
To withdraw from
so you're paying income in the US and you're paying the income from Spain as well.
Yes. And so that's where, so our friends in Canada, for example, they pull a Canadian pension and they know that the taxes that they pay in Canada are lower than what they would pay here in Spain. But because they're Spanish residents, they have to pay taxes on that here in Spain. So they budget for it and they know that every year they're going to owe X amount of euros to the Spanish government in tax.
And they I thought it's like reciprocal. So if you pay the amount of tax on the income that you make from a 401k withdrawal, let's say, and you pay your taxes in the US, I thought it was anything above that, like the Spanish tax, it might be at a higher percent. So the difference between the both you pay, I'm not sure. Is that how it works?
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. So if you paid, for example, let's say you took out $100,000 in your 401k, and in the US, maybe that's 20% of is your tax bracket. I'm just making these numbers up, right? But let's say that in Spain it's 30%. You've already paid 20, you just paid the 10% difference. Yeah. But the other thing is it's offset by, so if you rent your house out, all of the deductions that you would take from renting your house, you get to declare here in Spain as well. And so it's, and on paper, you think, oh my God, I'm going to move to Spain and I'm going to end up paying thousands of dollars more in taxes. It's not always the case. I would definitely talk to a tax lawyer and tell them your specific situation and have them advise you on how much tax you would, what your liability would be here in Spain. And if you're not sure if you're going to be here, or even if you're sure that you're going to be here, register for the Beckham law, because that will make everything simpler for at least the first 5 years.
Got to remember that. I'm going to write it down. Beckham.
Yeah, I wish I'd remember.
Okay. So they still have golden visas in Spain, don't they? So you can purchase a home for $500,000 and get pretty much a golden visa, which is instant residency?
I don't know, actually. I'm not really sure how the golden visa works, in part because it didn't make sense for me.
Right.
As an Italian citizen, I don't need it. I can live here. So I never looked into it. But I do know that it exists. I was actually just reading, I think it was on Where Do Gays Retire, or maybe it was on Bears Retiring in Europe. It was on one of the sites, the pages in Facebook. A couple bought a place in, I think in Valencia, and to qualify for a golden visa. So I think, I'm pretty sure it still exists, but I don't know what the details
are. Right. So living in Sitges, are there any cons to you?
Yeah, absolutely. Like any place, I think there are cons. I think for me, if you don't like, it gets very quiet in the wintertime. So if you're the type of person that doesn't like that, winter times could be difficult. And then it can also get oppressively hot in the summer. So you have to be okay with the heat and you have to be okay with it being quiet. Tourist season can be a bit of a disaster. And also you have to be prepared to deal with some xenophobia. I actually just dealt with some this morning. I was walking my dog and there was a big dog that approached mine, and my dog doesn't like bigger dogs. My dog's on a leash and a muzzle because it's the law here. And this dog was not on a leash or a muzzle. And so, and he's just a dog. So he kept following us and my dog was getting more and more agitated. And so finally the owner turns the corner and he's got his face in his phone and he's got the dog's leash around his neck. And so I said to him, excuse me, sir, can you put your dog on a leash? Dogs need to be on leashes. And he said, so do people like you.
Oh,
go
my
back
God.
To your country. In Spanish. And it takes you aback. It's what the, like, really? Is that the type of, this is my country.
Right.
I live here. I pay taxes. I'm a part of society. But on the flip side, someone who works in one of the hotels came out. I think he works in one of the hotels, but he came out of the hotel and got into an argument with this guy in Catalan and essentially was saying, "Why are you being so rude? I see you walk your dog off leash every day. He pees on the pots. You're walking around rudely and you're yelling at this guy, but your dog is bothering him. Why are you being like that?" And I just walked away because I don't care to get in those situations. Yeah. And so that type of thing will happen. But you just have to balance it out. I think, how many times do I hear Americans yell at someone speaking a foreign language, "Go back to your country"? It's not
It's everywhere.
Just here in Catalonia. It's everywhere. Yeah. The difference is they don't have guns.
Shot,
so
right.
Don't have to worry about getting shot. Yeah. So those are the only things that I don't like really about living.
So in wrapping up, Leo, what would you say to our audience if they're thinking about relocating to Sitges?
Oh my gosh, I would say come and visit. Come during the summer if you want, if you'd like to swim in the sea, if you want to come for one of the festivals. Be aware that it's very different in the summer versus the winter time. If you are the type of person that likes your peace and quiet in the wintertime, it's perfect. I encourage everybody to come and at least visit. There's something here for everybody between the food, and we do have a few museums. We do have a national park where you can go hiking and things like that. Come and try it out. You don't have anything to lose. If you don't like it, you go try something else. But for me, moving here has been a really good experience and has changed my life in ways that I never really anticipated. But also you have to be prepared to go with the flow. Like, just, you have to enjoy, it takes a while, but once you get in that flow, it's like, I still walk down the streets every once in a while.
You're so lucky to be here.
I can't believe I live here.
Well, great.
I really feel that.
Great. So, thank you. Leo, thank you so much for this amazing chat that we had. It was I enjoyed it immensely. And we learned a lot, and our audience will learn a lot about one of the famous places in Spain to visit and to live, Sitges. So thank you again.
Nice.
And you're welcome. And we'll speak soon. Thank
you. Sounds good, Mark. I really appreciate being able to share. And it's been fun.
You're very welcome.
Thank you for
hosting. Take care now.
You too. Ciao.
Thank you for listening to the Where Do Gays Retire podcast. If you enjoyed today's episode, please subscribe to our podcast and consider making a donation by clicking the coffee cup on any page at www.wheredogaysretire.com. Each cup of coffee that you buy costs $5 and goes towards helping us continue the podcast. Thank you for your continued support.